Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
Today's episode of Zero Block 30, we have five rounds of the magazine. Round number one, last week we ripped on the Army a bit for their Sexual Awareness Month training that had the giant sheet cake, big smiles, and a little bit of a photo op. Well, the head of the Navy Sexual Assault Prevention Program showed up and said, "Hold my beer, we can top that." Round number two, who among us isn't getting a little bit thick these days? We're all a little bit thicker around the edges. Even Cons, even though Cons likes to work out, Cons has mentioned that he wants to get a little beach body. Mm. Being chunk is all well and good, but there's a new ruling that says you won't get a disability claim through the VA just for being, quote, obese. Round three, there's a Chinese jerk-off machine, and why Congress isn't doing enough to get us some of those, I'll never know. Round number four, Richard Cole, the last surviving member of the Doolittle Raid in Japan, has died at the age of 103. We'll tell you his incredible story. You're not going to want to miss this one. This, I think, is the epitome of a lasting memory of a historical unit that you can look at and just be like, damn, World War II veterans were bad fucking ass. And round number five, former guest Christy Ennis is on her way to conquer Mount Everest. What a tale that she is showing on her Instagram. We just want to remind you to check it out because she has persevered through so much in her life, and she's been on many quests of many different mountains. But going up Everest with just one leg is quite the feat, and we're going to talk about that for just a little bit. Let's do all that today, and it's going to be presented by our good friends at – I'm not sure. Hold on. our good friends at Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club. Yes. I love Dollar Shave Club, that they have everything you need to look, to feel, and smell our best. What I even love is the fact that I never have to go to the store. That's because, one, Dollar Shave Club delivers everything I need right to my door, and I actually like their packaging. It feels very fancy. It's not like flimsy packaging that you would get from a store that has a different type of razor blades or anything like that. It actually makes you feel fancy when you open it up. It's solid. It looks good. It's designed well, and that's part of it, is feeling like a fancy boy. Like last night on High Hater Show, Kate mentioned Pauly D and Vinny were in the office. They smell good. I bet they use Dollar Shave Club. I would be willing to bet money that they do.
Probably.
I use Dollar Shave Club on my legs.
Same. Which, yeah.
I shave my legs more regularly, which is rare.
This is not hyperbole. Dollar Shave Club changed my life. Not having to buy razors anymore was the greatest thing to ever happen.
I don't think you should buy a razor because I think your girlfriend is wrong. You look better with a beard. But I definitely think that you should use their toothpaste because it's minty and it's spearmint fresh. That's why I like their oral care kit. And it comes with a mint toothpaste tube. It doesn't look like everybody else's. Everybody likes to stunt no matter what you're doing. Stunt with some sage and pepper bath wash. That's what I do. I think it's actually just body wash, but I use it for bathtub. I love it. So what are you waiting for? Get your Dollar Shave Club starting kit for $5 right now at dollarshaveclub.com/chaps. The DHS secretary stepping down. Her understudy stepping down. We still don't have a Secretary of Defense. This is the longest that we haven't had a Secretary of Defense, an actual Senate-confirmed Secretary of Defense, since that position was established. I think today, actually, we're recording early, marks 100 days without a Senate-confirmed nomination as the Department of Defense. No DHS Secretary active. While we have a national emergency declared, things are running amok all over the place.
That's kind of crazy when you consider all the things that are going on around the world. The fact that we just don't have that secretary, either of those secretaries in place, is really just mind blowing. Do you think that's on the docket every day, or they just keep pushing that down the list? Like,
I think it's an intentional thing that they're not doing, so they don't have to get somebody Senate confirmed. They're using loopholes, and they fired the head of the Secret Service too.
Saw that.
Like all three.
Something's afoot. Something is afoot. Chemtrails.
And I want to also mention the Iranian Guard. I love the fact that whenever we say that they were a terrorist organization, they're like, no, you're a terrorist organization. I just think that if you're conflicting military might across the world, just declare everybody a terrorist organization. I mean,
that's one way around it.
I love that internationally, no, you are is a thing.
Yeah. So. The old rubber glue of the.
Yeah. Romney belts it back sticks to you.
Iran beats us in one thing, though. I mentioned this on Hard Factor show when I was on there. They named their National Security Councils. Ours is the National Security Council. You want to know what theirs is?
What is it? What? Tell me.
The Supreme National Security Council.
Wow. Damn it.
We have no adjectives at all in ours. It's just a straight up noun. I feel like that makes theirs better than ours. Because if we just have a regular one, we're like, no, we're the Supreme National Security Council, and we say, you guys are the terrorists. Like, it makes me look in the mirror. I'm like, fuck.
We got
Supreme is such a good adjective, too.
It is. We should name our National Security Council the penultimate National Security Council.
Wow, great.
Penultimate is a good
one. That would work.
Yep, that kicks Supreme out of the right out of there.
You know what? Like, how are we not the four of us? How are we not a think tank in Washington yet?
I think mostly because we're not that smart.
Speak for yourself, pal.
We should change the president to supreme leader.
Yikes, Brad. All right, let's start. Let's get into the actual topics.
The North Korean 0+30, they're about to tap you to be a producer.
You know what? He should be the producer of our soon coming militia cast that we're gonna have.
Yeah, that's right.
The AR-15.
Some cool gear.
Yeah, the AR-15 is still a great name. American Radio 15 Minutes. My goodness gracious, for all those militia members out there.
Great podcast.
The topics write themselves.
Yeah, I wish I would have joked around a little bit more when I named this one 0+30. What the fuck does that even mean?
I will say, you know, I love this show. I love you guys. But whenever I tell people that name, they're like, wait, what? No one ever really gets it.
I love it. I think people get it. Come on, guys. Come on, team. Come on, 0+38.
I shouldn't have let Kate name it, that's for sure. All right, let's go with round number one. Kate, you want to introduce us to what's going on with that?
Aloha there, guys. I'll make this story quick because we touched on Army last week, but this week, yet another branch is having a weird sexual awareness month. A sexual assault awareness month. Navy always has a weird sexual awareness month, but sexual assault awareness month. Different story. The head of Navy's sexual assault prevention programs had family vacations to Hawaii covered by the government. Even though she only worked a total of 8 hours there, she also billed the government for personal travel to New Orleans, Japan, New York, Spain, belittled her staff, and retired abruptly after investigators demanded answers, according to findings from the Pentagon. Jill Loftus, the former head of Navy's Sexual Assault Prevention and Response Office, denied the allegations, saying she had engaged in oversight activities on her trips and worked hundreds of hours on top of a normal work week. The best part, in one of the things when they were asking her about what the hell she was doing all this time, she justified the government paying for a trip to Key West in part by talking, she said, but I talked to bar owners there about sexual assault awareness.
But I also feel like anytime that you can take advantage of the government and use your position, it's not that bad. I mean, I
Shut take up. All Are
these. Don't let me finish, please. You can not all of these, but if you did it once, like for example, there was a time where my wife was doing work where she had to go to a Jacksonville hotel and they were staying at a resort on the beach. We took the whole family with us and stayed. So the fact that she did this once is not like a big deal. Like if you're going to Hawaii, you already have your plane ticket taken care of. The government's already taken care of your hotel that you're going to Hawaii. Bring your family. It's basically a free vacation. I have no issues with that.
No, the difference here is that would be like
I know. Like
Jesus. Watchdog Katie over here.
Taking a trip to Jacksonville, saying it's for work, but then not working either.
Okay, I understand. Like, I'm saying there is caveats where I think this type of thing is okay. You're not even letting me finish. Okay,
no, so fuck down my throat.
He's not defending her. He's just saying in certain circumstances.
I just hate this lady. I fucking hate her.
This might be your strongest take of anybody. Wow. And it's for a little bit of defrauding the old government.
I'm triggered. I'm really triggered.
Katie audits.
Just because she has such an important fucking job and she's just like gallivanting around the world taking vacations with her family and her lazy ass is barely working any hours. And she's charging us, our taxpayer money is paying for that.
That's true. I feel like when you are the sexual assault prevention response officer, you have to be completely above the board on everything because the climate and the military, they don't want to talk about sexual assault awareness. They don't want to talk about suicide awareness because those briefings usually are terrible. So if you're in one of those high level positions, you've got to be completely above board on everything. But I feel like I almost have to call her fat to get Kate back on her side.
Oh, no, not gonna work. I don't like her skinny. I like what got me too. The old like, oh, but so when they finally like came at her about it, she just retired. But she did this for like 5 years, and she said she did the old, oh, I had to go to Key West to research sexual assault stuff with bartenders. What?
You know what that is to me? That's the classic Lance Corporal don't know. Like, you, what are you going to Key West for? Well, I had to research it. Like, dude, you couldn't fucking go on the internet? There's not bars in whatever town you're living in?
That's like Captain Khan's going to the bars until 4 a.m., ripping shots on his company card and being like, hey, I was just making sure. Looking into the whole designated drivers thing for the office.
Well,
Baps goes to McDonald's.
I was doing research.
Greasy bag of Southern-style chicken biscuits and Egg McMuffins. But it's not for him. It's for veteran obesity research.
I don't mind cons going to the bar and getting drunk and doing it for research because I don't think that you can say the Uber app works well until you are incredibly intoxicated. If you have a blood alcohol level of 0.12, that's when you should be able to say if the Uber app works or not. In fact, they should have a thing where you can set it out before. This is a brilliant idea I'm about to have. I might need to copyright this. Uber should have a thing that if you're going out that night, you're giving the location of where you're at, and it should have just a big drunk thing in the middle of it where you just have to push it and it automatically takes you straight to your home address that you've already predetermined before you go out. And so then you don't have to like fiddle with anything else. You don't have those stories where people end up fucking hundreds of miles away. You don't have any of that.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Because
that was a good idea. Maybe I am smart. We should be in a think tank.
Thank you. See, I told you. Jeez. Trust me when I say these things.
Yeah. But I don't appreciate you bringing up my propensity to order a Southern style chicken biscuit with a round egg and cheese with an Egg McMuffin on the side. I don't appreciate that because like a lot of other veterans, struggle with our waist size. That's a 36? True. Yes. Am I doing better? Yes. Should I still lose a couple pounds? Definitely. Just like a lot of other people who are in the military who are going to be very disappointed when they get their VA rating, which I want to give another shout out to the VA before we move on. They have done so much better of people who are retiring, getting their VA rating before they actually retire.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great, great thing that's going on. I've talked to a couple people at the hospital lately, and they said that they aren't allowing people to retire until their VA appointments are complete.
That's so smart because it's so much easier when you're still in a unit and you could just go on post and get these things done versus waiting till after the fact. And maybe you lose paperwork and maybe the VA you're going to isn't as up to date as the one that you have on post. So I think that's a great idea if they're forcing people to do that.
They should do it across the board, whether you're retiring or just getting out.
Oh yeah. Like I had to do it. Like, well, I mean, I don't remember if I had to do it or if I just chose to do it, but I definitely did all of my VA claims before I left Fort Hood.
Even if you're just getting your DD-214, you should be able to go and get out on the 30th of the month. You're automatically starting at the VA your first of the month. All right, let's move on to the full, complete round two. Here we go. Fatty McFat vets all over the place are going to be pissed because a new ruling by the Department of Veteran Affairs General Counsel says that obesity cannot be considered a service-connected disability, despite the fact that America's major health organizations all say that it is. They say it's a disease. It says something that needs treatment. The VA is not allowing you to claim that it's a service-connected disability, which there's basically, I know I say this a lot, but there is two schools of thought on that. Like, you can have... Certainly, I've seen Marines whenever I was a company gunny. I saw Marines who were in shape, who were doing things, and they were running really well on their PFTs. They looked exactly like you would want a Marine to look in uniform. And then the next moment, they're getting different types of medication, whether it's for mental health care or something that happens along the way. They get pain medicine because their knees fucked up. And then all of a sudden they start to gain weight, because a lot of these medicines that the military prescribes you, one of the main side effects can be weight gain. I mean, I very specifically saw a dude who was struggling with PTSD, got put on, I think it was Zoloft, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And as soon as he was on Zoloft for 6 months, his mental issues got a lot better, but his weight gained and ballooned. And he was eventually chaptered out of the military because of his weight gain, not because of the PTSD symptoms. So I think that we're punishing people for gaining weight, even though the root cause of it is something that can very clearly be a service-connected disability.
And I think it's interesting to note, when I hear the word obese, I think of these people who are just wildly, wildly huge. And obesity is really a lot more technical in the sense that you could probably look fairly normal, but technically be considered obese. So I think that's important to notice. And I'm just speculating here. Is obesity considered a disease the same way maybe anorexia is considered a disease, in that you eat and you can't stop yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think for sure that there's mental aspects of it, just like there is with like body dysmorphia that you would have if you're experiencing like bulimia or anorexia and things like that. I don't think that that is all the time the case. I think that some people just get fucking fat while they're into. I think that they get into their 30s, their metabolism slows down, it catches up to them real fast, and they don't get fat. So I think that there is certain examples where obesity should not be a service disconnect or connected disability, but there, it shouldn't be flat out black and white across the board. Your obesity has nothing to do with your service connected disability.
Yeah. I think, I mean, the point is that if you just look at it from the surface, how is it that a profession where you're constantly active, constantly moving, how could you then say that something where is going to lead you down a path of good health could then also be the reason you're obese? It just doesn't check out.
Well, I don't think that's the case for a shit ton of jobs in the military. I mean, we all just like that describes the military as everybody is a hitter and getter, and that's just not the case. I mean,
no, I know
70% of the military by and large every day is a desk job.
And a huge amount of active duty are overweight, are obese. Especially,
yeah, what were those numbers in the Army? Do you remember? Like, not to shit on the Army, but I think it came out that like 30% of the active Army is like
technically. But that goes back to my point. That goes back to my point earlier. Like chaps, like for you and I, for our heights and weights, I think we would be considered, for the military standards, obese or at least overweight. We would, but you wouldn't look at either.
Yeah, I would be outside the body of fat standards for sure, because I'm 6 foot tall. I believe my max weight for the Marine Corps standards would be 205, and I'm 212, so I'd be 7 pounds.
You'd be what over?
7 pounds.
7 pounds over. We did a thing of the office. We took the Army regulations, and we asked everybody in the office who wanted to give it to us their height and weight, and like 3 people in the office would have been qualified for the Army.
So it's a little silly in that regard.
I just want to know. I just want to know how many vets were going to the VA trying to claim obesity.
I didn't know that could.
Then it became a thing that they were like, all right, we got to nip this in the bud. Jesus Christ. Like who? How many were talking?
I mean, especially when you're on active duty, you'd be like, hey, I'm pretty fat. I don't know if you.
Yeah, because also too. You
know, I'm very fat.
Yeah, you could certainly spin it certain ways to say that you can connect it to your military service as to why you gained a lot of weight. I could understand.
Yeah, it just makes me laugh. There must have been a whole run.
Then you get like compensation. You get money for the rest of your life for being a trucker butt. Love it.
That'd be great.
But I will say, I don't like when people want to cry about gaining weight when a lot of times it is just because of their own doing, not because of a mental issue, not because of a medical issue, but just because they're lazy. I don't have a soft spot in my heart for those lazy people.
Kate does. Right, Kate?
I do. Yeah. I do. Come over. I'll make you guys cookies if you're listening right now and you're one of them. I'll make you some snacks.
I have case by case basis. Some people I'm like, you're just fat. And some people I'm like, you're fat, buddy. Give me a hug. All right, let's move on to round three. Round number three is going to be presented by some Marsoc dudes who made and sent us some Ruckpack energy shots. I like these things. They actually taste good. A lot of times you'll have these energy shots that claim to give you energy throughout the day that taste like shit, and that they always have to have like a ton of caffeine. Well, the Rucksack dudes, they made some energy shots that some have caffeine, some don't, but they all deliver a bunch of energy in a little 3-ounce shot. That might be what you need to get your fat butt back in the gym. If you want to check them out, go to ruckpack.com and ruckpack on Instagram and Twitter. You can use the promo code zero at checkout. You're going to save 10% on any purchase, and Ruckpack will donate 5% of all their profits to charities like the Marine Corps Law Enforcement Foundation, some Team Some Simply Required, which is another badass group that you could check out. People are always asking us, like, what are some different examples of different veteran charities? We always say Headstrong. We always say Canines for Warriors. But this Team Some Simply Required is very, very good too. Team Rubicon as well. So check out ruckpack.com. Use the promo code zero at checkout and help yourself, help a veteran with a veteran-owned company, and give back to other veterans. That's ruckpack.com. Use the code zero at checkout to save 10% on any purchase. Help out some dudes who are in Marsoc or doing some good shit outside by going to ruckpack.com. All right, so this next story, throughout the last couple days, really, it's been going around a lot. There's a Chinese company that has developed an automatic sperm extractor, and it's helping clinics collect sperm from donors reluctant to masturbate in a hospital setting. Now, as someone who has had a vasectomy and has to unload show clear at the doctor's office and break myself down shotgun style while in a room in a closet next to people, it can be quite uncomfortable to do what the French call jerking off in a hospital. So this company developed something that looks like essentially an anteater and a butthole mixed together, and it thrusts in and out, in and out, in and out. You're not going to believe this, folks. And almost like a sucking or thrusting, if you're doing it doggy style, motion in order for you to put your penis in it, and it'll extract the sperm. Well, they're using this just because they want sperm collection. They need to be able to test it for medical purposes and all that. What I think Congress should do, these things aren't cheap, right? Kate, how much do they cost?
They're between $5,000 and $6,000.
$5,000 or $6,000. That's pretty expensive for a robot.
I'd say that's cheap for the military, though.
Yeah, that's cheap for the military. That's a pretty expensive pocket pussy, for lack of a better term. I think that they should have these stationed in every single mental health clinic at the VA. There should just be closets and closets full of these bad boys. If you come to the VA to get your mental health care treatment, because we need to incentivize this. I think that's part of the problem, that we don't incentivize people enough to go get mental health care. You can go in and you can have 7 to 8 minutes with this robotic pocket pussy free of charge, and then go already relaxed into your appointment.
So this is going to be utilized as an incentive to get people to take care of their mental health?
Yep, just come.
What am I supposed to do? Let it boop my nose?
Well, they can develop one for a lady, like bring in one of those Sibian things.
Oh my God.
This is quite a stretch.
What's wrong with having a little Sibian? I mean, that, like, having a Sibian room is fine.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
What? I mean, honestly think it's a great idea. And you can even do branding, like with other organization, like Sibian brought to you by our good friends at Ruckpack or something like
there
that. Like,
you
where
go.
You put Ruckpack so on the side, take a
helping
shot
veterans.
That bad boy get nuts. Or you go in, like maybe the other one is brought to you by Milk Life for the cum extractor one, where there's just nothing but dairy free flowing everywhere. It'd be lovely.
I just like these little apparatuses. You can buy one, by the way, on Alibaba.com if you're listening, for $5,000 to $6,000. I like that it says it does a full range of visual, auditory, and olfaction stimulation.
Ooh.
That smell. It smells. It makes noise.
What do you think it smells like? I bet it smells like one of those butterfish that we talked about on High.
Oh, my God.
To make you shit yourself.
I don't know. But the fact that it stimulates your eyes, your nose, and your hearing, like, what is this thing doing? Oh my God.
What's that term whenever, like, you have a butthole that's blown out of your body? What's that called?
I don't know, buddy. You got me.
No, not a hysterectomy.
Hemorrhoids.
No. I watch it on Dr. Paul all the time. It happens to cows after they get
pink sock.
Like essentially the pink sock where your butthole basically falls out of your body. That's essentially what the sperm extractor looks like, because it's just pink.
Yeah.
They need to work on the aesthetics a little bit of it. And I wonder how firm it is.
Like, can you imagine if a barracks had this thing?
I was going to suggest these, before they should go to the VA hospitals, maybe they should get sent downrange.
There would be a line of these things. Yeah, for the troops, let's host a fundraiser to send these little jack-off robots to the troops. For
Can you imagine all the different places cum would be if they had these overseas? Like, you just give this to a battalion of Marines, they would fuck the shit out of this thing.
Yeah, we'd be completely destroyed.
Yeah, and you wondered how I was going to tie this into the military. Come on.
I was curious. Also, that brings me to no free ads, but the Fleshlight tweeted out the other day that they're looking for personalities and shows to work with. Guys, I think we should make a case for ourselves and help connect Fleshlight to the troops is a no-brainer to me. I'm just saying.
Did you guys ever see one of those actually downrange?
A Fleshlight?
Yeah.
Buddy, in my drop pouch. What the fuck are you talking about?
No, I saw the guys. One of the guys showed me. They would make homemade ones. So what you do, you roll up the socks. And then when there's that hole in the middle of the sock, you put a condom in.
I just want everyone to know Kate's actually like motioning and doing everything as she describes this.
Yeah. Or you put a glove, like a surgical glove, in that hole in the sock, and then you put lotion in it, and then you bang your sock with a glove.
Or, and this isn't based on personal experience, you take a banana peel, microwave it for around 9 seconds, and have a good time in your own personal can.
That's they called them field expedient pocket pussies. Yeah. You can find a way to make your own.
Yeah.
Or they can have a $6,000 robot, you know.
Either way, basically, we just made that device cheaper, honestly. They should just have a bunch of bananas all over China.
They should. And boy, I just looked at the next round. I'm like, good luck transitioning to this one.
Give us, fuck it. Here's some Bernie Higgins. Richard Cole, who was in the Doolittle Raid, was the last member of those who fought in the Doolittle Raid to die. He died at the age of 103. And what an absolute full life he led. We wanted to tell you the story of what happened on the Doolittle Raid, but this story deserves a little more justice than we're able to deliver. We're going to go out to the American Veterans Center, who in 2014 had Fox News anchor Brett Baer explain what happened on the Doolittle Raid and all the stories behind it. Here's that audio clip. Listening to that story, it reminded me of everything that's great about World War II, from the technological advances that they did so quickly. They saw the enemy that they had to fight in Japan and Germany, and they were like, you know what? We got to fucking put our noses to the grindstone and figure this out and figure it out fast. With the bureaucracy that surrounds everything that we do in the military, we can't figure out if ladies in the Navy should be able to wear flat shoes or not. It takes us years of the debate to do this.
Umbrellas.
Yeah. In World War II, they had to fucking go back and completely redesign planes, redesign tanks, get different weaponry, all that on the fly. And they did it, and they did it really, really well.
And it seemed like nobody questioned it either. They just said, this is what we need to do. We need to shift the momentum. Because right now, you know, following the bombing of Pearl Harbor, the country was in a really bad place. And it looked bleak for our country and our involvement in World War II. So following President Roosevelt's speech that we were going to get involved with the war, and then so quickly after that this raid happens, it really speaks to the fortitude of these gentlemen and the military in general.
And when you hear President Roosevelt speak, you're like, man, if anybody talks like that, I'll listen to him. From the
Yeah, just a tremendous orator.
You need so many more. Maybe I'll start doing ad reads of President Roosevelt. Today's episode of Zero Block 30 is presented by our good friends at Ruck Pack. Ruck Pack is giving you energy.
That is actually so much. You're really good at that. Seriously, that's really good.
You would have crushed it.
The thing that really stood out to me too, and I'd heard this term used before when describing this raid, but that these men were all signing up willingly to go on a suicide mission.
Yeah.
The chances of survival were extremely low, if at all. And yet they all still took that step forward and said, yep, we're going to go do this. This is what our country needs. And although I'm sure that they were scared and they prayed to whatever religion that they
pray to, whatever God,
God but they still went ahead and accomplished this great mission. So it just speaks again, it's a term that's often used for World War II, the greatest generation, but it's just another shining example of why that term was coined.
And I think it shows the level of what they were awarded with whenever actual Doolittle, he got the, mm-hmm. he received the Medal of Honor. Everybody else, I believe it said a Distinguished Flying Cross.
Yeah.
Everybody else in the entire unit, all other 80 aviators got the Distinguished Flying Cross. That just would not happen. No, you would not have a blanket unit getting something like that. And when I hear stories of like what you were saying, when people are knowing that they're going into battle and that they're probably going to die, it makes me more frustrated when I hear that World War II veterans are different than us, because it reminds me of the story that Rob O'Neill showed here. He said that whenever they were going to kill bin Laden, that he had to kiss his kids goodbye. They all thought that they were going to die on that mission. People are still ready to pick up that cross and bear it if they absolutely need to. And it shows that the valor and the courage that we've had in the military, uncommon valor is a common virtue. I think that that's exactly what these men represented whenever they went on this raid. Absolutely incredible stuff.
And I was really, I didn't know until I listened to this clip and watched this clip, the tradition that they started with the chalices and getting together every year, the camaraderie that you have in that unit is something so special. I mean, to be able to walk around the rest of your life and people know that you are one of the Raiders. I think there's a handful of units in our military that have that sort of history, the Raiders, Easy Company from the 101st, the Tuskegee Airmen, where you just say it and just automatically invokes a visceral reaction inside the person listening. It's just something so special to be a part of. And it just seemed like this gentleman, Richard Cole, the last one to survive, it seemed like he led a great life and very humble about being some part of something that was really changing the tide in World War II.
I think one of my favorite parts of this is that at some point, whenever he says that they go back and they know that as a small group, they're not going to open this 1896 bottle of Hennessy until it's one of the last groups. And seeing them in the video, we'll post the video on the blog, seeing them crack open that 1896 bottle and having a sip of the Hennessy in their chalices is just so badass. It's everything that you want in military tradition. It's why we invoke those images whenever we have a mess night where we say that we are honoring the table dressed in black. We have a lemon for bitter as their fate and salt for the tears that were shed for them. They had that on level 10,000 by cracking open that 1896 bottle of Hennessy.
Right.
So to the men of Doolittle who are past, we raise our glasses as well. If you're drinking at home on a Friday night, sip one out, research a little bit more about what the Doolittle Raid guys did in all their glory. Let's move on. Round number five, real quick, Kirstie Ennis, who has been a guest on here, she lost her leg in Afghanistan. I think it was a helicopter flight. Wasn't it?
Her helicopter crashed that morning, and she suffered damage to her jaw, to her left leg that needed amputation below her knee. So she has become a really – she was on what? Cover Sports Illustrated?
Yeah. The body issue.
ESPN, the body issue.
The body issue. And since then, she has decided to scale the seven summits, the highest mountain on each of the seven continents. So if she reaches Mount Everest, which she's doing that right now, right, Japs?
Yep.
That'll be the fifth of her seven summits. So just best of luck to her, because that's so cool.
Yeah, and getting to the point where you have to make that decision to amputate your leg because it didn't happen immediately for her, I cannot imagine making that decision where you've like, you're just so tired of surgeries to try to save it, where you agree with your doctor, you're making the conscious decision to chop it off.
She has such a great personality and a positive outlook. Kate and I had the opportunity, we were invited by Jay Glazer to go work out with his organization and Nate Boyer's organization, MVP, Merging Vets and Players, and we got a chance to meet Kirstie. She was there that evening, and she just, you would never know that she experienced this traumatic event in her life. And I think so often people will get down on themselves and think their life is tough. And I just urge you to look at someone like Kirstie, who had something that really could have put her in a downward spiral and made her depressed and maybe even taken her own life. But instead she's gone the complete opposite direction, and she's doing something that if you were in the best shape of your life with all of your limbs would be extremely, extremely difficult to complete. And she's doing it with missing a leg. So
that's another that's another interesting part of it. When you think about climbing with a prosthetic, the other big concern, she said, is she said on this particular trip to Everest, her biggest fear is frostbite on her residual limb, on her other limb. Mm-hmm. So I didn't even think about that. Like, now you've only got one left and you got to. So she said the carbon fiber socket transmit cold super quickly. It could get brutal. So even the part where it attaches to her prosthetic is a concern with the way the cold is there. So still very, very cool, though. She does Walking with the Wounded Treks, a nonprofit, with, and the same with Chris Long and the Water Boys when the football player for the Eagles, and they did that big hike and everything. She's part of that kind of stuff. But yeah, very, very cool. Love it.
All right, cool. Let's move into save rounds and alibis. I want to start out today. There was a story that one of our listeners sent out to us that he is stationed on Fort Sam. There was another soldier who was going through treatment at the Wounded Warrior Training Battalion there, or the Transition Battalion at Fort Sam. And those of you who don't know, Fort Sam Houston is in San Antonio. They have the world-class Wounded Warrior Battalion there that they can get so much treatment. Fort Sam Houston's hospital is one of the best hospitals in the world, especially if you're dealing with burn wounds or severe trauma, to get over that and through it. The Fisher House here is incredible. But sometimes other elements of the story get passed on. We take very good care of the soldier who is going through at Fort Sam Houston, but part of this story touched my heart because I am a dog handler by trade in the military, spent 10 years doing that and being around dog handlers. This dog also lost his leg. His handler was lost a leg and was wounded by a suicide bomber in Afghanistan. The dog also was injured in the story. Well, how it works is that the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, Marines, anybody in DOD, they view the dog, like I've said many times before, as a piece of gear, not as an actual equal member. So the dog isn't required to get a Purple Heart. The dog isn't required to get treatment. They'll either let the dog pass, they'll euthanize the dog, or they'll adopt the dog out to the handler. Well, obviously, when you've been through a traumatic event like being attacked by a suicide bomber with a dog, you don't want your dog to pass unless he's absolutely ready. This dog lost a leg, was retired out, and now, unfortunately, has come down with cancer as well. Because the dog has already been adopted out of the Army no longer takes responsibility for those treatments. So what I'm asking, if you are a San Antonio listener and you know a vet in the area, a veterinarian who can take care of this dog, please reach out to me. I would love to get you in contact with this soldier so we can get treatment for this dog, because when you're already going through treatment and doing things for your mental health, having something like your partner, your working dog, going through it is terrible. I know that from experience. I've mentioned a couple times that my old working dog, who saved my life several times, died of cancer. So if we could help this troop out, I would be very appreciative, and it would be something that would mean a lot to me. So if you know of a vet in the area who could do this at low cost, and I'll help out as much as I can with the finances too, just let me know. Please reach out to me.
That's just so tough though. You know, I get it. I get why the dogs, and you've explained it before, Chavis, I get why they have to be considered gear, but it just seems so contradictory to human nature to look at the dog and spend time with the dog and then say, oh, okay, that's just a piece of gear. That just always gets me.
Definitely. But it is what it is. And I think that it'll always remain that way because they don't want to get attachment, because, and there's two sides of that. Mm-hmm. Like, one, you have the government looking at it from a financial perspective, but two, you want to have that deep in your head as a leader, like as a battalion commander, as a first sergeant, as anything like that. Because if you're sending these people in, you have them to be a troop expediter, what's the fucking word? A force multiplier.
Force multiplier, yeah.
So if you are sending a dog in, you as the handler are much more willing to sacrifice the dog and send the dog in. You can't look at him as an equal partner. You have to look at him as what he's intended to do, and that save troops' lives on the ground. So I kind of understand it from a leadership perspective as well. Even though it's not pretty, it's not cute, it's not fun to talk about, right. It is what it is. What about you guys? Any save rounds?
Yes. So Saturday actually is the 100th meeting between Army and Navy in lacrosse. I actually didn't realize that monumental game was being played until just this week. I mean, I knew they were playing. I just didn't know it was the 100th meeting. And people should know that Army and Navy lacrosse, if you're into lacrosse, it's very good lacrosse. I mean, they're both perennially in the top 20 in the country. Army's number 20 right now. They're actually, something I didn't know, They're number 4 and 5 all-time winnings in Division One for a lacrosse program. So if you're looking for a good lacrosse game, Army-Navy lacrosse on Saturday.
I was looking for a good
I knew it. It's on CBS Sports. So there you go, buddy.
There you go. Kate?
For my final note, I felt it would be worth mentioning. I was scrolling Twitter on Monday or yesterday, and I saw the FDNY put out the 5555 signal, which means one of their own has died. And when I looked, I thought, I looked to see what happened to the fireman. And it turns out he was a Marine reservist who was killed in Afghanistan. And the Pentagon has identified 3 Marines killed in Afghanistan on Monday as Corporal Robert A. Hendricks, 25, of Locust Valley, New York, Sergeant Benjamin Hines, 31, of York, PA, and Staff Sergeant Christopher Slutman, 43, of Newark, Delaware. They were assigned to the 25th Marine Regiment, 4th Marine Division Reserves, and their convoy was hit by an IED near Bagram Airfield. So I know he, again, was a Staff Sergeant Slutman was a fireman here, and the city is certainly mourning that loss. And just to see, you know, it's still happening. It's still, it just breaks your heart. So I just wanted to give, you know, just a moment for those Marines. That's all.
No doubt about it. All right. We'll be back on Tuesday. Make sure you listen to those shows too, because I want to call our listeners out. We know that you listen on Friday. The Friday shows are the big ones. You better start listening on fucking Tuesday or you're going to get NJP'd. I would hate to have to NJP majority of our listeners, but I will do corporal punishment, have no problem with it. Sound the retreat.